I love working with families who are, you know, going through a big difficulty because everyone is more curious, everyone is more intentional, everyone is much more clear on what they want, and often the clarity is we just want our kid to be okay and happy and healthy and smiling.
Another Kind of Mother is about rewriting the script around our ideas of mother and mothering across cultures, historically and spiritually, in order to free both women and men from within the constraints of a dying paradigm. And all of this in service to creating a more beautiful world. I'm Delphine, and I'm really glad you're here. Welcome, Nicole Connell. I am so happy to be here with you today and dive into this topic of, among other things, learning differently and appreciating how we all come to this life with different skills and being able to acknowledge them in ways that society traditionally may or may not. And understanding what brought you to this place where you felt called to assist others in appreciating those differences and stepping into themselves and the world with that appreciation and skills to do things differently. Can you speak to what inspired you, first of all, to do the work that you do?
Yes. So I actually did not intend to do this work at all. I have always loved children. It's just been such a natural interest in my mind to deeply support kids. And so I started to explore ways in which I could do that, which in our culture is usually like a school teacher. And I explored, you know, public school, Montessori school, different things. And I just came to the conclusion that for me, holding a classroom wasn't the right fit for me because I couldn't really deeply connect with every child because I'm holding the whole classroom. And it was just a little too overwhelming as a really highly sensitive person. So I went on a quest to look for other careers that I could do that were one-on-one. And one day I was looking, this was back when we had newspapers. Newspapers still exist, but I had a newspaper. And there was an advertisement for something called educational therapy. And I said, oh my goodness, this is exactly what I want to do. I can work one-on-one with kids. But I was also in my 20s and I was prudent and I didn't want to just spend a bunch of money on graduate school without being sure. And I happened to find a job on Craigslist of all people, of all places, where they were looking for an educational therapy assistant, the center. So I started working there and I just fell in love with the work. And I'm actually very different than the kids that I often work with, is because I have what I call an ideal school brain. So I was really good at school. I could perfect, perform, please. I got straight A's, and it came at a cost. It came at a really big cost because at the end of my schooling, I didn't really know who I was. I was just really good at figuring out what the teachers wanted. And I had a massive mental health crisis. And moving through that, I really started to tap into the notion that there are other aspects of me than just being a good student. And I got to deeply explore those. So when I started working in this environment where kiddos were struggling with what our culture terms dyslexia, dysgraphia, ADHD, you know, they're just not fitting into school. I had a very different school experience than them, but I knew what it felt like to not fit in the system and to really struggle. And I really, really oriented towards their self-esteem and what I could do to build that. And so part of that work that came in is I just got very clear that I can't just focus on what they're struggling with, like reading support and all of that, that's academic support. I also had to equally focus on what they're great at, and I had to find their areas of brilliance and really support those equally to provide a more balanced approach. So yeah, that's kind of how I got to where I am. It wasn't very clear and linear and intentional, but it's just such a joy to get to reflect back to kids a more wholesome reflection of themselves that doesn't just include the struggles and the tricky areas, which we all have, but it also includes the areas where they shine that might not be recognized in school.
You mentioned the learning differences that are termed as. Do you see those differently? Do you hold those differently?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of the way that we see the world and see different experiences has been, you know, colored by things that are a little perhaps antiquated would be the word, right? So when these terms came to be, I'm not sure exactly when that is, that like they were created, but I think that there is a different way to look at it. And I'm really about empowerment. So if people love those terms and they resonate, amazing. If people find them a bit limiting, that is one of the challenges I've seen with the terms, because if you break them down, dys, you know, means, I believe, not, right? Dyslexia, dysgraphia, can't write, can't read, can't, attention deficit hyperactive disorder. Those are really big words to put on a child. And if they resonate and the kid loves them and the family loves them, amazing. I'm not here to tell, you know, anyone what to do, but I am here to encourage like your own story and what resonates. Yeah, because attention deficit hyperactive disorder, those the words just err more towards the negative, kind of like how I was speaking before, is I could no longer just work on their tricky areas. Like, I think the terms don't encapsulate the gifts. So if I were to wave a magic wand and, you know, maybe re-term some of these things, I think that there could be a lot there. Now, unfortunately, the way in which our society is currently structured with how things are called, you know, they're kind of set in stone right now. And different institutions like schools want those terms of how they're currently being spoken. But from my point of view, if I could redo it, I would.
Well, just in terms of the energetics of those words, taking on disorder as a kid, when you're already feeling perhaps, you know, behind the curve relative to everybody else in the class, is a big additional burden. We have enough labels that we put on ourselves that make us feel bad, that I would imagine that adds even more weight and pressure. Do you, in these, I don't know if you use the term learning differences or not, but
yeah, I learning differences. I also like neurodiversity. But really, I ask, you know, the kids and the families what they like also, you know, because like I can have my own language, but really it's about the person that I'm supporting and what they might want to hear.
Well, and what if none of this was considered a difference? What if it was held as just a different channel of the norm? And is that your experience? If we threw all of the labels out, seeing these children, people holistically, has that been your experience in terms of seeing the whole person. What if none of this was viewed in those ways? What opportunities and gifts would these people be able to bring through in a whole different way?
Totally. I think just having acceptance for every unique learning expression would transform humanity, really. Because kids have varying tricky areas and varying gifts, but traditional school, you know, only measures and validates certain ones. So what ends up happening is then there are, you know, there's a subset of kids that feel like they're chronically not good enough. They're chronically not living up to the standards. And these kids know, I mean, they're six and they know what math group they're in. They know that they're not performing like the other kids. They know, and that has an impact. And what breaks my heart is, like, as a community, we don't need all of the same type of person, right? We don't need someone who's, we don't need every single person to be good at the things that school measures. We actually need diversity in our community to thrive. But what happens is these gifts that some kids have don't get nurtured because they're not measured or recognized in their school setting. And then the hyper focus is on what they can't do, even though, you know, if let's say they struggle with spelling, they could use technology. Thank goodness we have that now. They could also ask a friend to help spell, and maybe they have a lot of creative, amazing ideas. And then they could work with that friend to create a story. And maybe that friend who's really good at spelling, you know, doesn't have a ton of creative ideas. And then there's a synergy that can come from those two, but we miss out on that because we don't see what a lot of kids can do and give space for it.
Yeah. As you're speaking, I'm picturing these communities with sacred economy, the focus of the sacred economy, where we're all doing what brings us joy and where we thrive. And there isn't the necessity to put a higher dollar value on someone who has, you know, XYZ skill and lesser dollar value on the teachers, for example, where when we're doing what's in our joy, it's all valued for different reasons, just exactly for the reasons that you explained. You know, the great speller might not be good creatively, and we could all weave together in a whole different way. Have you ever spent any time envisioning an ideal education system? And if so, how would you create that?
Well, I think there are a lot of models, and there's a lot of interesting educational frameworks out there. Like right now, one that is gaining in popularity is unschooling or self-directed learning, where, you know, there's so many different ways to do that, and you really follow the child. I've supported some unschoolers, and my approach has always been kind of balanced. It's like, okay, who are you and what do you want? And then also, I'm an adult and I've lived in the society, and I'm aware that there are some skills and experiences that would be really helpful for you to have so you can be prepared for this society. So I think it could look a lot of different ways, but what I keep coming back to with parents is really, like, what do you want for your child's education? Someone once told me that education is outsourced parenting, right? And so, yeah, right now, you know, right now we've outsourced a lot to the school system. Is the school system creating the education that you want for your child to thrive at, living in this society that is so different from when school was created? Right? Because there's so many life skills that I think kids in this day and age could benefit from that are not part of the standard curriculum. And a lot of the standard curriculum includes things that you could use Google for, or technology, or, you know, I don't really understand AI, but, you know, there's so, like, you can access so much, you know, it's okay if you cannot memorize 8 times 7, because there's a calculator literally everywhere, right? But what about resilience? What about feeling forward? What about being with intense emotions and emotional pain, right? Like all of these life skills, I think are so key to education. So that could happen in a homeschooling environment. There are amazing progressive schools, I'm sure, doing amazing work. But I think for me, it would come down to really checking in with the parents of what do you want for your kids' education? And then either choosing a school that does that, or if they don't do all of it, weaving things in to support it, or creating it and designing it in your own unschooling environment. And trusting yourself as a parent to know what you want for your child. And you can also consult different people in your community and get a sense of, you know, what do kids need when they are turn 18? How are they going to make it in this, you know, interesting world? I work with families often in kind of like rock bottom crisis situation where their child is refusing to go to school. So they're getting really intentional of like, what actually matters here? Is it my child's grade, or is it that my child is okay and smiling and wants to be here? Right. So different, you know, life experiences can create, yeah, different interactions with intentionality. But I think because of the way our society is structured, if your kid is doing well, I mean, you just send your kid to school, right? Like there are the way things have been done, and you don't really question them unless you have, you know, you just get really intentional as a parent or something happens.
Pointing exactly to your own personal experience, you masked, if you will, well, in that you did well in all the ways society says we're supposed to do well. But when it comes down to your heart and your soul and your beingness, you were suffering, you were struggling. What can parents look for in that when the masking looks so good?
I think it's, you know, every person has their own journey, right? And so, you know, some kids go to school and there might be a little masking, but they're okay, right? You know, and then some others might have some masking going on. But I think like if my parents had come to me and be like, Nicole, it looks like you look really good on the outside. You're getting A's. We're very proud of you, but looks like you're internally struggling a little bit. I probably would have been like, no, I'm fine. Get away from me. I kind of had to go through my own process. And I don't think I could have seen, like, even this concept of masking. If you had talked to me about it as a 15-year-old, I would have said, no, I am going to get into an Ivy League school. I'm doing great. Right? So I couldn't even see it. But I think the gift of going through that experience is now I can see how misaligned it was. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. Like it wasn't a fit for me. And I spent so much time outsourcing like what I actually wanted to do until it combusted. I love working with families who are, you know, going through a big difficulty because everyone is more curious, everyone is more intentional, everyone is much more clear on what they want. And often the clarity is we just want our kid to be okay and happy and healthy and smiling. Forget the grades, forget the 4.0, forget everything else. We want them to be who they are, and we want them to be here and share who they are.
And thrive. Yeah. And
thrive.
Where do we look? Where do we begin? Where do the seeds get planted so that kids don't have to get to that crisis point?
Well, I think it comes back to the mighty goal of shifting the systems, which is not easy. But even things like, if I had someone who came in and gave a guest presentation in high school about perfectionism, or achievement culture. Or you know what? Actually, I don't know if you've seen the documentary, The Race to Nowhere. It's so beautifully done. Essentially, and I just love the title, like Race to Nowhere. It was just looking at the achievement culture when I was growing up. Essentially, it was on Netflix at one point. I don't know if it's still there, but if I had seen that, I think I probably would have said, oh, I see what's going on here. And even having, you know, mentorships, or, you know, we have the parent relationships, we have the teacher relationships. Those are great. But having more of like a mentor relationship, or someone had come in who was in their 20s and shared their story with me, I think I would have been able to get it a little more from someone who's lived through it. And like, if there was a life skills class in my high school, if there was a class where we could look at our strengths and our gifts and really nurture them. And also those skills of being it's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay to be with uncertainty. It's okay if things are nonlinear. So if that was woven into the curriculum, I think I would have had an easier time.
That all makes sense. Is there, even at a younger level, somewhere we can go in and start planting those seeds? Those sound like amazing options for high school that I wish my daughter had as well. And are there places we can start with 5, 6, 7 year olds to normalize differences, not just differences, but discomfort, like you said, and ambiguity? And
I think there's so much parents can do on the individual level with their parenting choices. And I'm definitely not a parenting expert, but I love Dr. Becky, who has a podcast, and I learn a lot from her. So there's totally intentional parenting choices that you can make. And kids also spend a lot of time at school. So, you know, it's kind of systemic. And my greatest wish is I wish we could really get rid of grades. And this is shocking to me because I have worked so hard in my life. Like, it's shocking that I'm saying this. I worked so hard in my life to get A's. Like, I can't even tell you how many A's I've gotten and how many hours I put in studying to get perfect grades. And I think that just the notion that you can have all A's and everything's perfect, that's not true. You're always learning and growing. I had the good fortune to go to a Montessori school when I was young, and they didn't have grades, letter grades. They had numbers. So you always had a mixture of 5, 4, 3, 2, 1s, because 5 was mastery and 1 was you just learned it, so you haven't mastered it. So it's more about mastery. So at any time, I could never have all 5s. That's an unattainable goal. And that's kind of like life. In life, I can never have all 5s. Something's going to go wrong. Something's going to happen. I have some learning curve. But I got the message from middle school to college that I could have all A's all the time. And I put so much of my worth in it. So I think just rechanging how we look at grades would do a tremendous service, you know, but not all schools are going to be interested in that.
I know for my own daughter, who was diagnosed with learning differences and had accommodations all through middle school and high school. And fortunately for her, did not have to take the SAT to get into the college that she wanted to get into. She now is a sophomore in college, has not utilized any of the accommodations that she was given in college, and she's on the dean's list now. It's like, how do these things happen, and what is it within the systems that just is so upside down and mixed up. And having conversations about it exactly like you are initiating and creating, I think helps see that change.
Yeah, it breaks my heart because I feel a lot of times it's like, how can we get these kids through 12th grade with their self-esteem intact? Because oftentimes there is more opportunity in college because you can choose your classes, you can choose your major. I mean, depending where you go, you have a lot more choice. So you can actually take classes in your area of brilliance. And if you don't want to go to college, there's trade school, there's jobs. I've definitely worked with some kids who are so like mechanically inclined, and they can see 3D things and they can move things and like just in ways that spatially, that's the word I'm looking for, spatially gifted in ways that I am not. And there are different pathways for that. But in K-12, depending where you go, there's often not.
Yeah. Yeah. Even way back when I was in school, the whole idea of trade schools was being eliminated for the most part. And I would have thrived. They used to call it home ec, but actually I sew, I'm a designer. I love to create in that way and never had those opportunities in school and probably would have ended up in fashion design school had that been an option instead of being, you know, in a college prep high school that didn't value skills like that.
Totally. Yeah. There's so many kids that have so many gifts and areas of brilliance that we needed as a society, and they're not being nurtured and we're losing out.
Yeah.
As a parent, you have a lot of power, and there are kind of the ways things are societally and in education, and you have a lot of choice. You know, you can take a different path than the standardized education, and like, this is your child. Like you really can choose to weave a different path for your child. And it can be hard going counterculture, you know, but finding other like-minded parents who hold that space, who, you know, hold a different lens of children and intelligence.
Yeah.
So there's no easy answer, unfortunately, but yeah. I think, parents have a lot of power and choice in how they can raise their kids and how they weave things in to their daily life. Even things like modeling as a parent, your own tricky areas. Like, for example, I'm really not great at parallel parking or parking in general. Like I'm not good at it. I also am not very good at telling if an avocado is ripe, just like little things like that. It's like, oh, this is my tricky area. Here it is. I'm still okay. I'm still intelligent. You know, oh, and here's something that I'm really good at. And, you know, maybe your child, this is probably very common, your child could be really good at some of the things that you're not, and really recognizing that. So if I had a child, you know, I'm really bad at telling him this avocado is ripe. Would you do it for me? Can you? Oh, thank you. Gosh, you're so good at like sensing the ripeness of the avocado or whatever it is. So weaving in little things like that, I think, can go a long way.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Is there anything else you want to speak to in terms of your work in general? I know you don't just work with children. You work with adults as well, and all the way across the spectrum. Is there anything else you'd want to drop in here relative to?
Yeah, two things. So one, I think the level of educational trauma that a lot of us have experienced is far greater than we may realize. And that's for individuals who did not fit into the school model. That can really affect how you see yourself hugely. And so even getting support around that as an adult can be really helpful. And also to the people who had ideal school brains like myself, I also have, you know, it's a different level of educational trauma. It's very different. But I've had a lot of things that I've had to work through around that. And education is so formative to who we are. And we get so many messages about who we are, what we're capable of, how intelligent we are. And we can relook at those if that feels of service. We're always at choice to do that. And it can be really powerful. And then the second thing I do that's really fun is I offer girls leadership work. So I really believe that kids are so much more capable than they're given the opportunity to express. And so online, I meet twice a month with a group of girls and they get to lead. So they literally get time, like they usually about 10 minutes, they get to lead the group in whatever they want, you know, within reason. You know, we have safety concerns and they know that we're not going to commit any crimes. They know that. They like to laugh at that. But they get to be in charge. And then it culminates in the girls leading an online retreat for their parents. So the girls get to step into this different role of teacher and be seen. And it's like not just being seen by the other girls and their own parents, but also being seen by the girls' other parents. So the community. And we end with appreciation. It's really sweet. And so the girls each get appreciated for their leadership and what they brought. And it's different members. It's girls appreciating them. It's other girls' parents. It's their own parents. And it's just really powerful. And I love doing that work. So yeah, I keep trying to think of different ways of, okay, so if our systems maybe they don't have the opportunities for these kids to express their power and their leadership, it's like, how can I create opportunities outside of school? And it's been really, really beautiful.
Well, and one other thing I noticed on your website was you do a college prep experience for girls. And is it like a rite of passage sort of experience?
Kind of. Well, it's a little more of like, let me give you everything I wish I had before college. because, okay, you got into college, so you know how to play the school game, you know, to some extent, and how can we make that more easeful? But also, what is it like having roommates? You know, what is it going to be like without your parents being there? And it's really fascinating to hear the types of questions like the girls bring of, you know, just basic life questions that they don't learn in school.
Is this just the girls with you so they feel like they have more freedom to express and ask questions that they wouldn't necessarily ask their parents or their teachers or?
Yeah, it's just with me. And how I do it is we have I have topics and questions that I think are important, and I put them in the middle of the circle, and then they each get to choose one and we talk about it collectively. So it's not me just saying, this is how it is. You know, the other girls might have some wisdom on how to keep on top of their executive functioning and their planner, you know, it's not just me. And then they get to answer or they get to ask questions.
Beautiful.
Yeah, because there isn't a lot of prep on that life skills piece.
Yep.
And then what happens is they go to college and it can be really difficult. I mean, it can be difficult with or without support, but kids often at a college prep school are prepared academically.
Yep.
And not always, depending on the school, for the rest of life. But if you're not eating regularly, if you're not exercising, if you're not getting up on time, college is going to be really rough.
Yep. That first semester or that first year. Yes.
I was talking to recently a college admissions coach who helps people get into college, and she was saying, she's like, yeah, there is this need for like a college success coach after, because so many kids are so busy academically performing and doing the extracurriculars that they don't do chores around the house like laundry. I mean, that was me. Like, my parents very much were in the mindset of your job is to be a good student. We'll hold the rest. But then when you go to college, your parents aren't there.
Often yeah. Who actually washes the sheets in your dorm? And yeah,
they just appear clean.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And the introduction, maybe for the first time, to drinking and sex and all kinds of different things, depending on your high school situation. But having the ultimate freedom to make different decisions in those directions on your own without the supervision.
Yeah, one of my favorite things to do with girls when I work one-on-one often is to practice saying no, because sometimes girls don't feel comfortable saying no and they don't know how to say it. And so to build that up, you know, if it's a yes or a no, whatever their choice is, but to feel strong that you can set a boundary and it's okay, and to deliver it with grace through practice. So maybe you feel more comfortable to say no when you want to say no.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining me on Another Kind of Mother. If you enjoyed the podcast and can review it on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, it'll help this message reach more people. And a special thanks to Wendy Colonna for our theme song called Shine.